Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the world, and fans of the movies, television, video games, and Star Wars, of course. This is Mediocrity Podcast, your haven, your temple, your synagogue of everything fun and entertaining. Oh, Mediocrity, episode number 81, I think. I think 81. It's a lot. It's a lot. Where the show is just okay. I'm Brian Kluger. You can find this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe. I'm joined, as always, by the best duo in the intergalactic planetary Beastie Boy system, Jonathan Atterbury and Jeremy Maygert. How are you lovely men's doing?
Oh, I'm great. I'm better after that intro, I gotta say. Yeah.
I'm glad you're doing better after the intro. I always try to give it my all for these intros, and I have a good time doing it. Oh, my goodness. We have so much to talk about, but you guys doing all right?
Doing great.
Doing well. Can't complain.
Can't complain. Can't complain. Let's talk about it first. Let's talk about, I think we've all seen it, and spoilers are abound right now because I just imagine everybody's seen this movie. Of course, I'm talking about Avengers Infinity War. First off, before we get into discussion about the movie, I have to say that so far, in its just few days of, it hasn't even been open a week in theaters, and Infinity War has grossed over $785 million. Opening weekend alone, it grossed $257.5 million. And it's broken tons of records. It has the biggest opening weekend, the biggest April ever, the biggest spring ever, the biggest PG-13 opening ever, the biggest Saturday, the biggest Sunday, the biggest three-day gross, and the fastest to $150 million, the fastest to $200 million, the fastest to $250 million. This has broken Star Wars records. Infinity War, and it's only not even been open a week. I imagine this might just beat Titanic and Star Wars and Avatar. Who knows? It's impossible to say at right now. But I think we all saw Avengers Infinity War, and judging by the box office numbers, anybody who's listening to this podcast, Mediocrity, on iTunes and Stitcher Radio have probably seen it too. So spoilers are coming all over the place. So, Jonathan, Jeremy, myself, did we love Infinity War?
Absolutely.
I believe we did.
we really did.
It was so good. Oh, they really – I really wasn't nervous going into it, but I was a little bit just because it was just – it's a culmination of like 10 years and every character and – it could have been done. It could have been bad, but it was so good. And I think, and I know a lot of people have saying this, but I think that it's just as emotional as it is hilarious and funny and entertaining. Do you guys agree?
I absolutely agree. I think that it was everything that I wanted it to be. Okay. Really. I wasn't really worried about the quality of the film at all going in. I knew it was going to be great. The only thing I was worried about was the safety of some characters.
Yeah. So I know we've talked about this. I know we did like a death list. I know there was, you know, all this stuff, and Jeremy and I saw this movie together, and I think we were just blown away, after it. However, I think when I saw the movie, since I see so many movies in the theater, I tend to not audibly gasp or yell or clap or applaud during movies. I think I did that 3 times during this movie, like, incoherently. and I think Jeremy witnessed this. And I think Jeremy, I just want to know Jeremy's thoughts, because I know Jeremy's our resident, like, comic book expert. He's in the business, and he's followed these stories, not only in movie form, but comic book form for a very long time. So you got to ask Jeremy, like, his thoughts, how they did it, what he expected or different. What do you think?
I dug it. Like, you know, a lot of what we got, you know, I was really just curious to see in this movie, you know, was Thanos going to get all the stones and actually use the glove, or was that going to happen in the next movie? And so I was a little curious to see kind of how that was going to go down, like, really, like, when stuff was going to fall. And but, man, it was a blast, you know. I thought everybody was really good. I really like, you know, the thing that's impressive when you have that many movies is I feel like for the most part, all the characters got to do their thing. You know, nobody really got outshined by anybody else. You know, you got to see new characters interacting together, like, you know, Thor hanging out with the Guardians, that kind of stuff. You know, new people getting introduced to Wakanda. Thought it was super fun.
All right. And then on the other side of the spectrum, somebody who doesn't really follow a lot of comic books but loves the movies, Jonathan, what'd you think?
What did I think about the movie as a whole?
Well, like, I know you liked it, but, like, it was, I guess, what am I trying to say? Character-wise, everything fit in, and it was, like, exactly what you wanted, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was completely satisfying to me. I didn't walk out feeling like, oh, I didn't think about this, or didn't like the way they handled this. There was nothing like that at all. I walked out just, like, completely satisfied. I mean, kind of upset, but satisfied.
So, yeah. So, I guess, you know, we all thought, like, so people who know comic books, they know Thanos, and that he basically can kill half of the entire universe at the snap of a finger. And that includes Avengers, that includes life on other planets and on Earth and everything. So this kind of happens in the movie. Actually, it does happen in the movie. And then people start disappearing, and I had a death list, and people who I gave 110% survival ratings to perished.
Same here, man. There were a few people that I was worried for their safety. And there were a number of people that I was like, nope, those guys are definitely going to be fine. And it was the exact opposite of what I expected to happen. Literally the exact opposite.
Yeah, it was – I think I looked over at Jeremy. I was like, what the fuck are they doing?
What is happening? That's how I felt. I was just like, no, what is happening right now?
We have to bring up, so a lot of people die in this, but one of, I think, the most emotional moments in the movie was definitely, spoiler alert, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, dying.
Dude, that was hard. That was literally upset. Like, I was upset. That made me feel, like, a little fucking disturbed. I did not like that. It was great that, it, like, the weight that it held, but it was too real. It was upsetting.
It was how they sold it, man. It was how they sold it, and it really reminds me of that scene in Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
Where it's like, no, I don't, you know, just like, I'm not ready, no. And I was like, oh my God, they're doing that to Spider-Man, the young kid. And
oh, so
just,
bad.
You see the expression on Tony Stark's face, and you're just like, ooh. That was rough. And Jeremy, what did you think of that scene?
I thought it was great. And, you know, it's funny because I saw the movie a second time. I saw it with Josie on Saturday. And when we watched it the first time, I didn't really get emotional. I think mostly just because there was so much shit that happens, even within the, you know, how big a 2.5-hour movie is. So much shit happened. I was just like, oh, my God, this is even a lot of stuff for 2.5 hours. And so at that point, I was just like, my mind was a little blown. So I didn't really get emotional then, but I actually got more emotional watching it on Saturday.
Really? What do you think of that?
I think you know, I kind of, for the most part, like, knew what was coming. And so I wasn't, like, blown away by the spectacle of everything. And I just got to be a little more in the moment of the movie.
Ah, so you think it packed a bigger punch the second time viewing?
Yes.
I guess following kind of stories and seeing, like, who does what and everything. But, yeah, that was crazy. And I can't – it's just – that's a hardcore scene. Like, even because us comic book people, we know there's another movie coming out. We know kind of what happens. And then hopefully all these people do come back. But a lot of people might not think that. They might think, like, this is it. No more.
I have been reading hilarious reactions from people on, like, Twitter that do not understand, that have no frame of reference for the Infinity Gauntlet and how the story plays out in the comics. And I'm just watching so many people, you know, lose their minds. And it's pretty fucking great.
Like, they killed all of the Guardians of the Galaxy besides Rocket? How? Why? They killed Groot again? No. You're just like, oh my God, that Chris Pratt, you're just like, no way. Because so at the very beginning of the movie, we see Loki die. And I totally predicted that. I gave him a 5% chance survival rate.
Well, I got to interject. Your survival rates, I feel like, should not be applied to this movie, but to the sequel. Because okay. since they're one big movie, I think that's where your survival rate comes in. Because I don't think Loki is dead yet.
Okay, so you think trickster style. Because I really think, like, the two people that really died in this movie are Loki and the Asgardian guy that keeps the time.
Heimdall.
Yes. Heimdall.
Yes.
See, Heimdall, I agree with you, is dead. I do not think Loki is dead.
Okay, well,
I think everybody else on that fucking ship is dead. But I don't think Loki's dead.
I mean, I hope not, because Loki, Loki's great.
Loki in that scene, it's kind of weird, because one second he's, like, just standing in the middle of the Black Order dudes, and then Hulk rushes into the scene and tackles Thanos. But then Hulk, he kind of, like, walks around the corner, like he's all of a sudden, like, re-entering the scene. And I feel like that was kind of, like, distraction a little, you know.
I also have to say that I'm a little upset.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We're losing. Connection lost. Connection lost. Abandoned ship. Are you still there? Wait, connection.
What?
Connection was lost.
I'm here.
On the podcast. So I didn't hear what you just said.
I just said I was.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Connection's lost. Shield's failing. Connection. There was
Guys.
A problem with the network.
He's gone now. Oh, there he's back.
No,
now he's back.
There we go. So, but yeah, I mean, it's not implied. They didn't again. Show his body, but they definitely, I mean, he was on that ship.
Yes, because I feel like they have to address that. They have to address Valkyrie.
Right.
You know?
There's a lot.
I didn't think about Valkyrie. I totally forgot about her.
We'll see what happens with her. Another scene in the movie that I think I think it has some of the best superhero entrances in a movie. The first time we got the Captain America entrance at the subway train was
that was so good.
So damn good. And then when Thor shows up in Wakanda with Groot and Rocket and they start battling.
Yep.
I literally, like, yelled. I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing.
Yep. In the theater that I was in, when Thor made his entrance all clad in lightning, they, like, the whole theater just exploded with applause. People lost their fucking minds.
It was so good. So good. Yeah. So the one thing do you think was too silly in the movie? Tyrion Lannister.
Yes.
The giant dude, dwarf.
That was fucking ridiculous.
I mean, it was funny. It was
too funny, though. It totally pulled me out of the mindset of the film. Everyone in the theater, I doubt this. Like, I really doubt they intended to have this effect. Everyone in the theater that I was in started fucking laughing their asses off when he showed up on screen. Like, you didn't even have to say anything. People just started laughing their asses off, and they're like, that's, you know, a 20-foot-tall Tyrion. It just did not work for my brain whatsoever. I love that dude as an actor. He is so talented, but I thought that was a really weird casting choice.
I mean, I get it, and I think that's cool. It might be too silly. I don't know. Jeremy, what do you think?
I think it's pretty silly. It almost just kind of feels like they made like a midget joke in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. I was like kind of amazed that what's that actor's name?
Oh God, why do I blink on this all the time? Peter Dinklage.
There you go. I'm kind of amazed that Peter Dinklage even kind of agreed to do that, because he's always resisted doing campy kind of midget jokes kind of stuff, except for Elf. That's really the only time where he ever like really subjected himself to that type of shit. But I was totally surprised that they went that direction.
I mean, he was a giant. Like, he was bigger than anybody, and a badass, too.
He was a dwarf.
Yes.
It was just a different type of dwarf.
It was good. The dialogue, there was no tangents. It was, like, literally one scene to the next. Gamora and Nebula, huge roles. God damn it, they better not kill off Gamora. They just can't do it. Some people seem to think that she's actually really dead. I'm like, they're making Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and then most likely 4. She's not going anywhere. They're not killing off any of the Guardians, minus Nebula maybe. But that's not the case in Infinity War. I don't get it. How amazing was Josh Brolin as Thanos?
I loved Thanos, man. It was so much better than I ever thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah. It not only did it look fantastic, but just the depth of character and the amount of gray zone that they were playing with that guy was so good. As you guys know, I hate a black and white kind of hero villain setup. And this was so, they just put him right in that Don Draper zone where you kind of hate him, you kind of love him at the same time, and you feel for him, even though he's a bastard. It's just so awesome.
Yeah, because in previous Marvel films, when he has cameos, he's always kind of like a bad guy. And here, he kind of gives his reason, like...
Yeah, just straight up, like, bad guy.
Yeah, but here, he's not. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's a feeling being, yeah. You know? He's a living creature with emotions.
True. The Guardians of the Galaxy entrance, where you just hear the awesome music, and then it says space, and then we got to see Star-Lord... try to be a man with Thor.
Using the deep voice.
That was so good.
Yeah, Drax is like, you are a dude. This is a man. That was one of the best lines ever.
That was really good. Yeah, it was great to see all of them talk and interact. Wong and Doctor Strange were great. We got to see Hulk not be the Hulk in the entire movie, minus like the first 90 seconds.
And I got to remind you, Brian, that Jeremy called that shit a long time ago. He said, I think that it's going to be Bruce Banner in the Hulkbuster armor. And he was 1,000,000% right about that.
I was 50% right. It was Bruce Banner in the Hulkbuster armor, but I was expecting the Hulk to tear out of that armor when he got piled
on.
Right.
Yeah. That's
so
right.
I was half right.
You were right that it was going to be Bruce Banner in there. The one thing that I guess I want to say I'm a little let down with is that I felt like comparing the fight choreography in this one to Winter Soldier, it was a disappointment. You know, the fight choreography, there was some neat stuff, but there wasn't really any single moment where I was like, oh shit, that looked so fucking cool. Like in the Winter Soldier, that whole movie was filled with moments like that for me, where it's just like, oh my God, that was such a perfect fight choreography thing. And I didn't really feel that a whole lot in this movie.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get that yet, just because I think it's kind of like there were just so many characters and you just like let it all the big stuff out at once in order to like,
well, there was a lot of fighting. It just wasn't, it felt more like watching Man of Steel, that type of fighting where just like smashing into each other and going through things. You know, that's what it kind of felt a lot more like. It was a lot less graceful than what we saw in Winter Soldier. It was just kind of just smashing and flying.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Which was kind of cheap, but it was still great. I loved it.
It was good. So let's talk about the post credit sequence. We finally get Sam Jackson as Nick Fury again, finally, and he does get his motherfucker line in a Marvel movie. which was
just about
hilarious, but yeah, I guess they set it up for Captain Marvel, right? That's what the deal was, right?
Yep,
that's what the deal was.
So, is it going to be Adam Warlock or Captain Marvel going to reverse this time thing?
Well, I mean, you're not going to get Adam Warlock until the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Okay.
I also think it's a little funny that it's implied that Captain Marvel has some sort of galaxy-wide cell phone.
Yeah, that is pretty great. I mean, he had it's like a piece of technology. It wasn't a pager. It looked like a pager, but
it looked a lot like a pager. Let's just call it like we saw it.
Well,
and I like that he's got it programmed with her little logo too. Yeah. It's like they had to create that logo for his little special pager thingy. His interstellar pager for Captain Marvel.
The funny thing is, I mean, the Captain Marvel movie takes place in the 90s. So that most likely just is, some kind of like modified space tech on a pager.
Oh, interstellar awesome. Pager.
That's actually cool. That post-credit sequence when like just the civilians start disappearing and dying, that was pretty hardcore and scary. Just like,
yeah.
Oh God, what are we going to see next? And then just like kind of fades to black, just like, whoa.
Well, and I also want to say one of the other emotional, really like deeply heavy moments in the movie was Steve Rogers' last line.
Which
where he's that? Lying down and he just says, "Oh God," and that was it. Like that's the last thing you heard from Cap in that movie. That was some heavy shit.
It was, man. It was good, but they did the Russos, Anthony and Joe Russo, who directed it, did such a fantastic job of keeping the emotions and the comedy in check and mixed really well. Like they just did a good job. And for being a 2.5 hour movie, it seemed to go by in like 60 minutes. I was having so much fun with it. And it was like, you're like, I want more. I could have totally sat down for 2.5 more hours for the second part of that movie directly right after that.
I agree. It flew by.
Yeah, it was damn good. Damn good. So, yeah, I can't wait for it to see it again. I need to see it again. But Infinity War, if you haven't seen it yet, see it. You're one of the only people on Earth who hasn't seen it yet. But let's get to that. Speaking of Marvel movies, Marvel has announced finally they are doing a spinoff solo movie of Black Widow with Scarlett Johansson. Black Widow is finally getting her own movie. And it is said that they have interviewed over 65 filmmakers to take on the role as director for the Black Widow film. They're looking for a female director. This tells me like they are really investing a lot in this spinoff movie if they've already interviewed over 65 filmmakers for this. I don't think they've done that for any other movie. So is there anybody you would like to see take on this Black Widow movie director-wise?
No one I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, they'll pick somebody good.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything you're wanting to see for the Black Widow movie? Like do you want it an origin? Do you want it to take place like present day or –
I would like it to be present day. I don't really want to see a lot of origin stuff. I mean, you're going to see it. I don't really need to see Scarlett Johansson where they do the fucking digital, ironing out of the face to make her look like she's 18 or whatever.
Right.
You're probably going to get that. I would like it to be modern day, and I would like Bucky to be a guest character in this movie.
Doing what?
Winter Soldier shit. I don't know.
Okay. Killing people.
Okay.
I mean, because it in the comics they're very heavily linked together. Even you had the scene in Civil War when Zemo activates Bucky and he's running around like whooping asses. And, you know, Black Widow makes the comment, at least recognize me. So there's a lot of history there that you can cover. And, you know, they can expand on that and then have a cool modern story. That's what I would like with him being a supporting character.
Yeah, I would like that too. I really don't need any origin stories for any of the characters. I feel like they've been introduced already. I'm cool with it. Just go forward. I'm tired of origin shit.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, especially, but I feel like especially we don't need an origin story on a character that we've seen in six movies. I don't know. It's like we don't need an origin story at this point. I mean, you can show a little bit. You know.
Maybe if you do like a 10 or 15 minute sequence at some point, but then do it some other time. But like, you know, there'll be Hawkeye in that movie too, for sure, in this spinoff film. He has to be. I'm very curious, very curious about that. But over 60, that's a lot of filmmakers. Hopefully I'm sure they'll get the right one, but it looks like they're investing a lot in that movie. For sure. Did you have anything else to add about that movie or Infinity War, Jeremy?
No.
No?
I mean, you guys, sometime we got to do predictions for what we're going to see happen in the next movie.
Yes. We should do that next episode for sure. Predictions on what will happen, where it will leave off. It'll take off right after the first one. I don't know, but I'm super psyched about it. And I'm curious if there is, when the Blu-ray is announced, I wonder what deleted scenes they left out and what will be added onto the Blu-ray, because I'm very curious on if anything they left out of that.
He's frozen again. There we go.
Oh, I'm not frozen. I'm hearing now. Something's weird with
them. You're frozen. You were frozen for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
Dang it. Infinity War, go see it, do it. It looks amazing. Let's move on a little bit to video games real quick. Did any of y'all play Red Dead Redemption when it came out all those years ago, the Rockstar game set in the Old West?
Yep.
Jeremy, did you?
I did. I don't think I finished it, because if I remember correctly, it's like the only video game in existence that's not a Lego game that doesn't let you invert the camera angle.
It didn't? I'm trying to remember if it did or not.
I don't think it did.
Okay, so Red Dead Redemption is Grand Theft Auto, basically. Same studio, same game, but set in the Wild West as opposed to like present-day cities. It's super fun. They even added a really cool zombie element to it that you could add on. But finally, years and years later, we were getting a sequel, and they unveiled like a really cool trailer for it today. And I must say, that trailer looks clean and great and just one of the best-looking games so far that I've ever seen, like visually speaking. What do you think? Anybody?
It looked like a lot of cutscenes.
Yeah. It was a lot of cutscenes.
I didn't see anything in there that specifically where I was like, ooh, that's gameplay. It looked like all cutscene stuff.
Okay. I'm curious, because it looks like we see like the main protagonist from the first game, John Marston, in this game at some point, but it looks like it you play.
I'm sure
like,
he's going to be a side character.
Yeah, I hope so. But it looks like we play like a gang of outlaws, because like the whole premise of the game, it looks like, is that the outlaw days are over, and so like the sheriffs and the government is trying to kill or round up all the remaining gangs and outlaws in the Wild West. And I'm curious about that. I can't wait. I love so much everything about the last Red Dead game, like from skinning the animals and killing the grizzly bears from attacking you and all that stuff. It was just so much to do in that game. I love it.
I have no doubt that it'll be great. I mean, Rockstar pretty reliably put us out fantastic stuff.
I agree. And it comes out in October. and it's available for pre-order right now, so I'm super psyched. Other video game stuff, let's talk about Sea of Thieves. We got to.
Listen to him bringing up Sea of Thieves before John and I.
We're so proud of you.
Yeah.
We've been having fun playing Sea of Thieves, the pirate game. I feel like we've done pretty well over the last, 48 hours of that game. Conquered.
We have.
Skull Forge.
Yes, we cleaned house.
So there was new patches, there was new updates, fairly decent size ones. Is there anything you're liking or not liking about it?
No, man, I love it. I love that game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's little tiny things here and there, little bugs that could be tweaked and fixed, but overall it's fantastic.
It was pretty great. One of my favorite moments of the last 48 hours of gameplay, really, with the three of us, was that I was taking treasure to our pirate ship and had to go through the water, and right in the shallow end of the water is a giant shark. What did Jeremy and John do? They blasted it with a cannonball, immediately killed it, and I was safe.
We yep. actually used two cannons.
Yeah, that was
we
that
did
was so good. that was so amazing. Yeah, I'm really liking it. I'm so glad y'all convinced me to get it again. Very.
I'm glad that you're glad.
I'm happy you're happy. yeah, it's good. It's fun. I look forward to playing it, and yeah, I can only hope for better things. Like, I hope for, not so much now because we're still having fun playing it, because I could see, the old factor getting in. But if they have the fishing thing and new krakens and giant octopuses and shit like that,
Well, they've got a new expansion coming out this month for the game, a new big expansion.
Yeah.
And they've got big expansions planned pretty regularly throughout this entire year.
There's a video I need to watch, but I started reading an article where they said basically the developer is split into three teams, and they're all three working on stuff, and they're basically constantly going to be pumping out. We're going to get another update this coming week, like Tuesday or Wednesday. We're getting another update.
And it's crazy. It's basically the exact opposite of what's happening with fucking Battlefront 2. The exact opposite.
I think Battlefront 2 is just given up. I think they're probably mulling it over, should we sell here? Should we sell there? And just let somebody else take care of it and have it off their hands.
I will not be surprised if Disney fully pulls their shit from EA at this point, because they bungled it so bad. And, I mean, we're not the only people that are, swearing off EA games at this point. There's a lot of people that are pretty burned about this shit.
It's just unfortunate. You want it to be good, and it's just...
It's so beyond unfortunate. It is a outright shame on that company. It is embarrassing for them.
Yeah, because look what they did with two Battlefront games and Mass Effect.
There you go.
Ruined them.
Completely. Ruined them.
Yeah, they ruined Mass Effect.
They did. It's so bad. I mean, the only good thing that they've put out recently was Dragon Age Origins, and that was a long time ago. It's, it's pretty rough.
How long ago was that?
I want to say it was right when Xbox One came out. It was four years ago now? 5 years ago?
Wow. That is a long time ago. I just hope for the best. I don't know.
But Sea of Thieves, they're killing it. They're doing such a great job with putting out content and giving the people what they want. And I just applaud their innovation. It's a totally different feeling game. And that, to me, is the one thing, above all, that I love about this game.
Yeah, it's an experience that just no other video game gives you.
Yep. It's not about grinding. It's not about, hey, let's go do this stuff just so we can level up, or just so we can get this or that. You're doing it so you can have fun, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. Any other video games y'all checked out recently that you should talk about or mention?
Nope. Just playing Sea of Thieves.
Yeah. I hopped back on Destiny for a little bit because the Iron Banner's going. And I want to say they were they reopened the Destiny 2. They switched to 4-on-4 for all the Crucible stuff. and Iron Banner, they brought back 6-on-6, and it's way more fun. And the thing I miss about Destiny a little bit is the quality of the multiplayer maps. You know, just even back from Halo, it's just like flow of traffic and all that stuff. They just do it so well, but the game's just not fun. Makes me sad.
That sucks, because that game was super fun for like the 2 weeks we played it.
Yeah.
It was. It was good.
I'm gonna play Destiny through this year with the stuff I've paid for, with the Warmind thing that's coming out, and then whatever the next expansion is, and then that will be my last Destiny Bungie purchase.
Yeah, I've deleted Destiny off of my Xbox at this point. I've already got the season pass purchase, but I don't care. It's taking up space on my Xbox, and I haven't played it, and my interest level is just absolutely bottom out on that game. The only thing that would get me to play it is if everyone else – I mean, I'm confident that if they do something that makes it amazing, I will hear about it. And then maybe I'll download it again. But until then, until people are ranting about, oh, they fixed Destiny 2, it's so good now, then I don't want to touch it.
Like, I'm having more fun playing in Mad Max that I downloaded for free off the fucking Game Pass than Destiny.
Wow.
That's not – I've heard actually a few people say now that Mad Max is a lot of fun.
I highly recommend Mad Max.
Like Fury Road Mad Max?
Well, I mean, no, it's a little bit – there's elements of Fury Road in there, but it's more of your traditional, like, Australian Mad Max type of story.
Okay. All right. So, going back to Bungie, did Bungie just shit the bed? Like, it just – what happened to Bungie? Bungie used to be the top game company, I feel like, with Halo.
Destiny 1 had the biggest game budget in history. They spent like $600 million making that game.
That's crazy.
So I don't really know. But, I mean, a lot of everybody's complaints are the same thing, you know, that it is for us, where it's like there's just no content. You know, it's just doing the same stuff over and over and over again.
And the worst thing, the unforgivable thing about Destiny 2 is how crappy the guns and grenades feel. Like that's what – it's a fucking gun game. It's a shooter, and the guns feel like crap. They just don't fire correctly. The explosion range is all screwed up.
The grenades do no damage.
Yeah, it's so crappy. They just totally bungled that.
Yeah, I don't get it, because considering a game that prides itself in a huge part is upgrading your weapon and – stuff like that, and it does nothing.
And they all felt the same. That was what drove me so nuts, is like the first Destiny, there was such a great variety with how each gun felt and fired and behaved. And this one, they just completely compressed all of that. And the differences were so minute feeling.
And what's funny, when you compare going from a game one to a game two, when you look at like Borderlands 1 versus Borderlands 2, in Borderlands 1, most of the guns, like, you couldn't really look at a gun and tell, you know, one manufacturer from another. They all looked pretty similar. You know, if they were in the same family, they fired very similar. So it didn't really matter what you used. But then you got into Borderlands 2, and all of a sudden, there's like a shit million more guns. It's worth it to have all the, you know, to have different stuff for whatever, however you like to play. You know, and it's just funny when you look at how Borderlands did it with guns and then how Destiny did it with guns. And they're like exactly the opposite. And then what's going to be funny is Borderlands 3 is going to come out, and then there's really not going to be a reason to play Destiny.
So true.
Yeah, I liked Borderlands 1 and 2 for sure. I'll play Borderlands 3 when that arrives. I'm excited about that. So, that's video game news. If any of you are on Sea of Thieves, come say hi. Try to sink us. Try to get on our ship. The one thing I'm really hoping for in the next update is that you can have 6 to 8 people on a ship. Like, it would just be so amazing.
They're putting out one new ship, and it's probably going to be a 5 to 6 person ship.
Oh, I wonder how big that thing is going to be. That's what she said.
That's my prediction. I could totally be wrong, but they've got a 1 to 2 and a 3 to 4. It only makes sense that they're going to have, you know, 5 to 6 after that.
Yeah. All right.
Which I think would be really cool. A lot of people would like that, because I think people are a little frustrated that the party limit is only 4. Because, you know, as we've run into it, sometimes there's an extra person or two that we want to get on board.
Yeah. I mean, we could probably very easily roll with six people on a ship at any given point.
Yep.
Yeah, it's.
I would also like them to be a little more flexible. Like I would like to be able to roll with three people on a sloop. The galleon works with three people, but I feel like it's not optimal. I feel like you almost have to have four people to be effective on a galleon. You know.
I mean, I don't see why you couldn't have eight people on a galleon.
I completely agree with that.
Have party sizes, whatever you want. If you want to have two people on a galleon or 10 people on a galleon, I think that should be okay. And that would also be another reason to increase the kind of complexity and the depth
of the game. Is that what you're saying? Oh no. Oh no. We're paused. We're out of
10 people on there.
Could you imagine if you approached the galleon and all of a sudden, all four of those cannons started firing at you?
It'd be a nightmare, and that would add so much to the strategy involved in that game. I would love that.
Even when we were playing last night, when it was the three of us, it's really hard to sink a galleon when you only have two people firing cannons.
Right.
So it's like you almost have to, like, if you're on the helm, you have to kind of put it where you think it needs to be and then run down there, you know, take some shots with everybody else, you know, run back up there, adjust the ship, run back down, you know. And to me, it would just be so awesome to just have a fucking ship full of pirates.
It would be great.
And
Luger could just go full, hey, you guys, and slide down the sails.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. Sea of Thieves, do it. It's worth it. All right. One more piece of news before we get into some fun stuff. A new movie's been announced. It's a new sci-fi horror film called Vivarium. And it is going to star Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots. They will be together in this film, which will start filming in July in Ireland. Imogen will play a young woman who, along with her fiance, played by Jesse Eisenberg. What? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's funny? I'm missing something.
I'm gonna let you take this one.
I'm just laughing at the name Imogen Poots. Is that really her name?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Imogen Poots.
I think it's Imogen.
Imogen?
And I don't think that – I'm not sure that last name is being pronounced correctly either.
I mean, either way, it's great. If that's real, then even better.
I love the Imogen, though, like it's a walk-in emoji Imogen? Person.
I mean, so how you spell her name is Imogen, and then her last name is Poots.
Poots. And as a Texan, there's only one fucking way to say that word.
I mean, is it pots? Poots?
Imogen Poots.
What am I saying wrong here?
Imogen Poots.
What am I supposed to say?
I don't know. Either way, like I said, whether you're saying it wrong or saying it right, it's making me laugh.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, Imogen, Poots, whatever. She's been in a ton of movies. She was in 28 Weeks Later. She was in the remake of Fright Night. She was in the amazing movie Green Room. She was in Need for Speed. She's been in a bunch of stuff. But this next movie, this sci-fi thriller, just sounds really cool with Jesse Eisenberg, where she'll play a woman with her fiance who's Eisenberg. They're in search of the perfect starter home to start their life. But after this really weird real estate agent leads them to a new housing development, the couple becomes trapped in a maze of identical houses and forced to raise kind of like a demon child within these houses. So it seems like very cultish, sci-fi, hellish demon type of thing. And I'm very excited because I like Jesse Eisenberg and I like, however you say it, Imogen Poots, or I'm saying it. That's got to be how you say it, right? I mean,
where's the sci-fi element, though?
Now, this may pick up on – I'm going to play a video and put it up to my microphone because I have an audio file with the proper way to pronounce that woman's name. Are you guys wanting to hear this?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let's have some cross-media platforming going on here. Let's see. Technical difficulty. This is...
Was I right?
Wait for it.
Imogen Poots.
I was totally right.
Apparently you were right.
Oh, my
God. You were half right.
That's what the Imogen Poots.
Imogen. That's the way I talk. But Poots is right, though. I don't know how else you can say that.
Apparently Poots is right.
I figured I was right. I mean, y'all giving me shit. No, the sci-fi element, I think, comes in as far as, like, I don't know, the nothing is what it seems. Or might, I mean, otherworldly kid, alien kid, demon kid. I feel like that's sci-fi horror, right?
I think we went totally off the rails with the Imogen Poots thing.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't remember what we're talking about. It's Imogen Poots. The new title of this podcast is called Imogen Poots. Imogen. It's like emoji. Poots. I don't know.
Emoji.
Okay. All right.
Emoji Poops.
Emoji Poops. Emoji Poops. I just love that Atterbury just made his day right here, this name.
Dude, it doesn't take much. It really doesn't.
It doesn't take much. Okay. So before we get into our – we have not only two main topics here today, but we have three main topics. Before we get into these three main topics, I want to bring up the subject of Star Wars real quick. And specifically, the best moment in the entire Star Wars universe. And I want to see if you guys agree with me on this. The best moment in the whole Star Wars universe. Star Wars movies, I guess I should say. And I would include like the TV series as well. But I think the best moment comes from the movie Return of the Jedi. Now... Are you still with me here?
Yep.
Yes, my brain is trying to filter all of your added and then subtracted and then re-added qualifiers. While also saying Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that almost gave me a stroke right there.
Star Wars. So Return of the Jedi, I think the best moment comes with... the final, almost climactic battle between Luke and Darth Vader. I think that's what all the trilogy was leading up to, was that. And I think how it was filmed, John Williams' score, the necessary kind of fight choreography it needed to happen, and just seeing the son and the villain and the hero and the kid and the father, the whole thing came together within the span of like a minute and a half. And I think it just was so perfectly done. I think it's like the best part of the whole Star Wars movies. What do you think? Do you agree with me or not?
I love talking about Star Wars, but how are we here right now?
Where are we going with this?
This is so random.
Well, because we're going to talk about Solo, Star Wars story coming up. So prior to that,
I'm confused. What's your question?
I want to know what you if you think that's the best moment in the Star Wars, the whole Star Wars saga. Thus far.
I think the single best moment in the entire Star Wars saga is I'm a Jedi like my father before me. That right there nails it right on the head.
So that not the climactic battle, just like when you know the music is kind of moody and Darth Vader's like really just trying to get his son to turn, Luke to turn, and then just Luke just completely loses it and just turns on the lightsaber and goes after his father, and that's when you get like that amazing choir and orchestra music and like the fight scene, the camera angles. It just feels amazing. I don't know. There's something about it that always is really cool. I don't know if I think
agree.
It's one of the coolest moments in the Star Wars saga. If not, no, it is the coolest. I think in the most, maybe most emotional. I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy?
I agree. The I agree a little. I'm more on John's end than yours. It's, for me, it's less about, you know, him attacking Darth Vader, because the moment where he really saves his father, to me, is that moment where he says, I'm a Jedi like my father before me, and basically where the Emperor's not going to get what he wants, and he defies the Emperor, you know.
That is the goosebumps moment.
Yep, and that's the moment really where he saves Darth Vader, you know,
and fulfills his role as being a true Jedi.
But
it's that, yep, right there. Boom.
It's that. But I think in the prior scene, I think when he does cut off Darth Vader's hand, Luke has like, it's like, oh shit, he's gonna go Sith, or is he gonna stay Jedi, you know, light side, dark side?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that whole scene is fantastic. The whole movie's fantastic. But if you're talking about what one moment, your question was, what's the one moment, not what's the greatest scene, what's the best moment?
Okay, I'm curious out of all the Star Wars films. Okay, so with that being said, let's move on to Solo, a Star Wars film, Star Wars movie. The Han Solo origin story is coming out very soon, within a matter of weeks. So, knowing this, what do we expect to see here in this first Solo Star Wars? Because the guy who plays Han Solo, is it Elric? I'm trying to remember how to pronounce his name. Do y'all know how to pronounce it?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Imogen Poots. Yeah, there you go.
I could pull up a video with someone pronouncing his name, but that might be too much to do it twice in one episode.
Yeah, that might be too much. But that guy who plays Solo says he has signed on for 3 films as Solo. So I don't know if we're getting a trilogy of this guy for Han Solo. So, but in regards to this first movie, what do we expect, guys, to see in this first movie? Like, knowing what we know from the A New Hope to Last Jedi.
If you guys want to, I can handle this first, because mine's very fast, and I would like to just have you guys elaborate upon what you think. But I'm going to sum it up real quickly and say I think what we're getting is Ocean's 11 in space.
Interesting. So you think it's kind of like a smuggling bank robbing job?
I think it's going to be a heist film, and it's going to be a whole assembling of crew, putting together this guy and that guy and, you know, all these people. And that's what we're going to get. We're going to get Ocean's 11 in space, and it's probably going to be great.
Okay, so here I'm going to name 6 things. Say yes or no. Do you think we will see the Kessel Run?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think we will see Chewbacca and Han meeting for the first time?
No.
No?
I don't.
Okay.
Do you think they're already friends at this point in this movie?
Kinda. I would think. I mean, it's a lot. That seems like a lot to. But maybe they will meet. I don't think so, though.
What about you, Jeremy?
I don't know. I feel like it's hard to say. I kind of feel like they might be meeting in this movie, because you have the line in the trailer of where he doesn't really know how old Chewie is. I feel like for Han, I mean, I guess it depends. I mean, in truth, we don't really know if they're still doing the life debt that was in the previous story. So that might be in existence. That might not actually be part of canon anymore. But if they're still going to continue and have the life debt between them, I feel like you kind of have to show where the life debt comes from.
Okay. Right.
All right. There you go. All right. Will we see Han Solo winning the Millennium Falcon from Billy Dee Williams?
Of course. You mean, yes,
how will we
not? The ship belongs to Lando, obviously, in the movie, and they're not just going to leave it there.
So you think we'll see him winning in the card game or
yes,
the Jajeric game or whatever game they're playing?
Isn't it Sabacc that he wins?
Sabacc.
Oh, that's right, Sabacc, yeah. All right. So do you think we will actually, okay, so a twofer, will we see Han Solo meeting Jabba the Hutt this film and or smuggling for Jabba the Hutt this film?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. You might hear Jabba's name mentioned somewhere, since they're kind of like, this is Han venturing out into sort of like the kind of criminal underworld. You might hear Jabba's name, but I don't think Jabba's going to be a character in this movie.
Yeah, if it's true that the guys that's playing Solo signed up for 3 movies, I have a feeling they might address that in the next movie or the one after and really dig into the whole thing with Boba Fett and all that stuff.
Okay. And with going with Chewie and Hanmin, do you think we will actually see a Chewbacca origin with, like, other Wookiees?
They show him hugging another Wookiee in the trailer.
Okay, do you think that'll be on his home planet, or do you think that will be somewhere else on another planet?
I think it's unlikely it's going to be on Kashyyyk.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to get a Chewbacca origin. You'll probably see other Wookiees.
Okay.
I mean, the life debt originally, from what I remember, was Han kind of helped set free some Wookiee slaves that the Empire were using. And I think Chewbacca and a couple of his family members were among those.
I don't remember if it was with family members. It was supposed to be on the spice mines of Kessel, and where they had Chewbacca enslaved, and, you know, mining for spice, basically. And Han set him free.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. And that was what I kind of thought would happen. Is there anything else y'all are thinking we will see in this film alone?
I don't think we're going to see that just like that. I think that they've changed that a whole bunch.
I agree.
But, you know, they might totally address that. I don't know what else to say we should be expecting to see, because everything that was canon before is not now. So it could be anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think you're gonna get to see, like, Woody Harrelson kind of mentoring him, picking up, you know, him picking up a lot of his mannerisms from his mentor type of deal. A little bit of, like, the swagger and the mojo is probably going to come from that character, and I think you'll get some of that. Okay. Which, to me, that's actually part of the stuff I'm most looking forward to with this movie.
So the Alden L, I don't even know how to pronounce it. The guy who's playing Solo said he's signed on for 3 films. Do you think at some point, if they're doing a trilogy, the last
really handsome picture that it froze on?
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
That was great, as when he had the water bottle in his mouth. I wonder if it recording right now.
Yeah,
see, that's what I'm wondering recording. Too. If his thing's frozen, there's a chance that we might not be being heard at all.
It is recording. I can hear everything you're saying. Everything you're saying.
Oh, okay.
It's still recording. I don't know what's happening,
well, we're just wondering if it's lagging, if it's picking up everything we're saying.
It is. It is.
While you're frozen on a picture with your mouth open.
It is. Because Atterbury was frozen, too, so I don't know what the deal was. It was funny. But Solo, he signed on for 3 films, the guy who's playing it. So do you think at the end of the 3rd film we might see something like, oh, we have to go to this scum and villainy place, Mos Eisley? The cantina, and then that's how they will end maybe his 3rd movie or even this movie. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that the 3rd movie is going to basically set up and take you right into that.
Okay.
But nobody refers to it as this scum and villainy place. I do know that.
Okay, well I do. Okay, Solo Star Wars movie.
Space planes and Star War at the scum and villainy place.
You guys love it, how I talk. Okay, our next big topic. Movies we want to see that are based on books that have not happened yet. So movies that are based on books that have not happened yet that we want to see into a feature film. So, Jeremy, anything from you?
my list begins and ends exactly the same way it does whenever we talk about books being made into movies, and that is the Star Wars Darth Bane books. That's all I need.
So, with the whole Disney LucasArts train thing, Lucasfilm, do you think at some point we will get that in TV series or movie form?
I do not ever think we will get that, sadly. It requires a definitely, most likely, an R rating. I don't think you could do it even PG-13 with, like, the subject matter and the violence that's in the book in order to really do it the way you need to. So I don't think we're ever going to get it, and I just can't see them doing a – basically, it would require pretty much a trilogy to cover those three books. I just don't see them doing that and putting the money into a rated R Star Wars show that it would need.
Okay. All right. So there you go. There you go. It's good. I mean, I'd love to see it, but who knows? Maybe HBO and Disney will come together and make it. It'd be awesome. All right. Atterbury, what do you think?
So I've got a couple here, and a few of these have been made into like miniseries or TV shows, things like that. And I know that this one right here is actually being made into a great film, hopefully, and it's Salem's Lot.
Okay, so you want the remake.
That was a miniseries, and I'm really excited about the remake where they're going to make a proper movie out of it, and I hope they do it justice because the miniseries is an atrocity. And so I would really like that one. And you know what? In that same vein, I would like them to make a new version of The Pet Sematary.
They are.
That doesn't suck, too. Because
they are. I actually talked about that recently on the other podcast on the Multimedia Men Network called My Bloody Podcast. They are doing another Pet Sematary. They are remaking it. So I'm excited about
it. Excellent. That. Well, then that makes me very happy because I love Stephen King's books and I pretty much hate all the movies except for the new version of It and The Shining.
There you go.
And next up, I would love to see Dan Brown's origin, new book, that he just – the new installment in the Robert Langdon series, except I want new people making the movie. I don't want Tom Hanks in it. I don't want Ron Howard directing it because, let's face it, those fucking movies blow. All of them.
So
they're so shitty. They're so bad.
Who do you want to replace Tom Hanks and who do you want to replace Ron Howard?
I didn't get into that because that could be a whole segment.
Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson.
Someone better. somebody better with a better director that gets the depth of these movies and doesn't just water it down, make it for stupid people. Okay. That would be awesome. Next up, I would like to see, and we're probably going to be getting something kind of like this with the Amazon series, but I'd really like to see the Tolkien book Children of Húrin turned into a film.
So we talked about this on this show that's coming out. So do you think that Amazon's going to do it?
Amazon could very well be touching on that time period in their series. So I don't know, but I would love to see that addressed in film. So that'd be awesome. And last but not least, this was a book that got turned into a really embarrassing TV series that completely changed everything about the book that was great and missed the point altogether. And that's Ursula Le Guin's Wizard of Earthsea. And the Earthsea Cycle is the name of the book series. And they're so good. It's such fantastic fantasy writing. And it's so thoughtful and philosophical. And the TV series completely missed every ounce of what made these books great. So I would love to see that made into a intelligent movie.
Okay. Very cool. I like it. All right. The ones that I picked, one book that I love dearly is called Carter Beats the Devil. Fantastic book that would be awesome, made into a movie. It's kind of like true life history about a magician who performs a magic show for the President of the United States back in like the early 1900s. And he actually cuts the president into little pieces for the magic show, and then he's magically put back together as an illusion. The president is fine. 2 hours later after the magic show, the president dies, and this magician is kind of on the run. It's really cool. It's a really cool book, and I think it would be an awesome movie. Another one would be a super fun movie. It's called My Best Friend's Exorcism, and it is totally John Hughes 80s, but mix in The Exorcist with it, set in the 80s. I think that would be a killer fun movie, super good. And then another one by a writer named Warren Ellis. You probably know him from comic books. His novel called Crooked Little Vein about a kind of just like a downtrodden private dick.
and his kind of sidekick goth chick, who in a National Treasure sort of way, with the Constitution, the underground seedy underbelly of the American political system, Godzilla porn, murder, all sorts of stuff in this book that would make for a great movie, I think.
I thought I heard this was getting made into something.
Oh, Crooked Little Vein? God, I hope so. I haven't heard anything.
I think so, because the only reason I know is because a comic book that he does that I read.
We paused. What happened? Connection was lost.
But I don't remember if it was a TV show, movie, or what it was.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I hope so. And, of course, I guess my last add-on for comic book-wise, why haven't we received an Evil Ernie movie? Like, I just don't get it out of everything ever that has come from comic books into movies or TV. We haven't received an Evil Ernie movie. I don't get it. Jeremy, do you know why?
It would probably be expensive and not make that much money.
Probably. You're probably right. Evil Ernie's just a cool kind of concept, cool art. I feel like it would work, but I don't know. I'm still holding out. Hey, if we're getting Invincible, if we got Preacher and Walking Dead, we can get Evil Ernie. That's all I'm saying. All right.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Last topic of the podcast of Mediocrity on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We are going to talk about the most shocking moments of TV and film, either or a mix of both. The moments that really shocked us to our core in TV and film. Atterbury, what shocked you the most?
What shocked me the most is just about everything in Game of Thrones. I mean, seriously, the first thing I thought of when you said this was the Red Wedding.
Yes.
That is
number one on my list.
it has to be number one on everyone's list. There's nothing more shocking that has ever happened in anything. It's just the apex of film and TV shock. It was just enough to make everyone stand up out of their fucking seat and scream. It was crazy.
You're like, you killed the people of the whole show? What?
What is happening? that was so hardcore. I couldn't believe what I was watching. It's such a fantastic moment in TV history. It's just awesome. And like when Jon Snow got killed, and there's so many moments that I'm forgetting right now. And when Hodor died, there was just so much stuff. We're just like, what? No!
Hodor died? When Hodor died? Oh, his whole story
arc? That fucked me up for like a week. Yeah. There was like a whole week when I just wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Just because of that.
That did suck.
I don't know if I can't remember if either of you guys were into this show, but did you guys like Sons of Anarchy?
I've seen it. I haven't seen all of it, but yes, I know about it.
Jeremy, what about you? I can't remember if you were into that or not.
I have not seen any of it.
All right. Well, do you guys mind if I spoil something?
Yeah, go for it. This is spoiler.
Go for it, bud.
All right. So there's a moment where one of the main characters, Opie, who's the main character's best friend, gets killed in the later part of the show. And it was pretty shocking and upsetting. I didn't like that, but that was pretty shocking as well. Even though I wasn't alive when this happened, we obviously have to mention the Vader father reveal in Empire Strikes Back as being one of the best shocking moments in film history.
That's on my list. Luke, I am your father. You're like, what?
Yeah, it's got to be there. Avengers Infinity War, we just talked about it, but at that end, I was pretty shocked by everything that was happening. I was just not what I was expecting at all. That was shocking. And then last on my list, even though it's hard to kind of say that this was shocking because I was really afraid that it was going to happen, but when Han Solo died in The Force Awakens, that fucked me up. Like, I tried to emotionally prepare myself, and it still fucked me up. That's definitely on my list.
I wish I was there in that theater watching that movie with you when that happened, because it would have given me so much joy to watch. Just Your whole world.
Really? It would have given you joy? I think you might have just felt bad for me.
I don't know. Just to see you, your whole world come crashing down, just like, oh, they really did it. And I really think they did it just to fuck over John.
Jeremy was there. He comforted me a little bit.
He did.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was upsetting.
That was upsetting.
But yeah, those are my moments.
Good deal. All right. Jeremy, shocking moments. What shocked you the most?
Man, I probably got to go Red Wedding on the top of that. I mean, I don't read any of the books, so I really had no idea that that was coming. And what was the Stark dude who got killed in that wedding? Or sorry, that at that party?
Oh, the son. The son.
Yeah.
The oldest of the yeah. Stark boys.
What was his name?
Rob?
Rob Stark.
Yeah, Rob. So yeah, just like that that whole deal when they just started like hacking away.
And the wife and the mother, yeah, all
like,
of it.
Oh my God. That whole deal. And man, I gotta say, like, part of like the best thing about that honestly was getting on Facebook the next day and just watching people melt down.
Same thing with Hodor, man. I remember like Facebook exploded.
Just watching people get on there and be like, I don't understand the point of this show. I mean, that was everybody's fucking thing. It was so good. I thoroughly enjoy Facebook on those moments. That's the best time to get on there. That's really good. There's a moment in Breaking Bad, and I forget which season it is, when Jesse's doing – I think he's basically got high with what was the actress name? Kristen Ritter.
Oh, yeah.
She was on there. And she chokes to death on her own vomit, and Walt just stands there and like watches it and lets her die. You know, that was a pretty shocking moment where I was like, oh my God.
That was hardcore.
That's because you know why he's doing it, but then you see like, oh God, Walt's really not a good guy.
See, when you asked this question, I knew that there was something in Breaking Bad. I just couldn't remember what moment it was, and that's the moment that I couldn't remember. It was that.
Yeah. That for me is the key moment where, like, you know, Walt kind of always teeters on not just being fully evil, but that to me is the moment where it tips, and from that point forward where he's just –
He went full dark side.
Yeah, he went full dark side.
So with Breaking Bad, do you think another shocking moment was Gus Fring walking out of the retirement home room with half his face blown off? Because that was a goddamn good shocking moment.
I mean, that was great, but I don't know if – that didn't make me feel so shocked.
Okay.
I was just like, oh, that's awesome.
Okay. All right. Keep going. I like these.
You know, for shocking, I think those are – for shock factor, those are probably it for me.
Okay. All right. Those were good. All right. I've got a list of TV and movies. I'll start with TV. Did any of you ever watch The Shield, the cop show, The Shield?
No.
No.
Never did.
All right.
I tried, and I didn't like it.
Okay. I love that show. I've seen every episode, but the very first episode, the pilot episode, was so shocking because it follows like a police unit for street gangs, and they get a new rookie in on their team, and the main guy of the whole series immediately kills him in the first episode, like for certain reasons, but like it's crazy. That was a big shocking moment for me. Did any of y'all watch the recent Battlestar Galactica revamp that came out in like 2005 or so, or 2004?
Yeah.
So
we talked about this show a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica.
What is your time qualifier for recent?
Okay.
like 13 years ago?
10 years ago.
You said recent, and I was like, oh, is there a new
one
that I
missed? It's not 2015, Brian.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah, no, like
it's not 10 years ago.
All right.
Even 10 years ago is not really recent.
Okay. So
you guys remember that recent movie about the witch in the woods, Blair Witch Project? That was pretty good.
That recent movie about the alien and the kids find it and they eat the candy and they run around and shit?
What movie is that?
Really?
eat the candy and run around, find the alien. Oh, E.T. Okay, I get it.
Oh, God. Do you even like movies, Brian?
I do not. All right. So in Battlestar Galactica, when the final five Cylons are revealed, I thought that was a very shocking moment. I thought that was really good. In the TV show House of Cards, when Kevin Spacey pushes the journalist into the subway car and kills her.
That was gnarly.
That was pretty hardcore. And a really funny but super shocking moment where I had to rewind it several times in Mad Men when they had an actual, like, lawnmower up in the office and it ran over somebody's foot.
Right. Sent guts flying everywhere.
Oh, that killed me. I was like, did that just happen? That was a shocking moment. All right. That's TV shows. Let me move on to movies. Shocking moments in the movie The Exorcist when Reagan masturbates with the crucifix yelling, "Let Jesus fuck you" by Stat. That was shit.
That's something that, like, hasn't even been touched since then. That was, like, so hardcore that nobody's even wanted to even approach that realm.
Correct. When Sloth awakens in the movie Seven, when all the military guys are in there and they think the guy's dead on the bed and he wakes up coughing.
So hardcore.
That was shocking. The end of the movie The Departed, where Leonardo DiCaprio was immediately shot dead.
Yes. That was so shocking. You're right. I don't know how I didn't think about that. That blew my mind when I saw that in the theaters. I could not fucking believe what I was seeing.
Because you hate it so much. You're like, what? Huh? Who's going to win? What? He shot. Oh, yeah. Just went through all of that. The end of The Usual Suspects, of course. Kevin Spacey revealing that he is Kaiser Sose in such a way.
As the not – maybe not a bad guy, according to Brian.
Yeah, maybe not a bad guy. I think also a shocking scene was the first chestburster in the first Alien movie. We just didn't know what was happening, and then all of a sudden, shit, that guy has a bad day.
I remember I've asked my dad, you know, because I wasn't obviously even alive when that movie came out. And I asked my parents what they thought the first time they saw that movie. And they both said that it was one of the most shocking things they had ever seen when that first chest explosion happened. My dad was like, couldn't even believe what he was watching happening. So it must have been pretty hardcore. I mean, I guess to us, we're kind of jaded with that kind of stuff. But at that point, it was just really hardcore.
Well, because you don't know what's happening. You see an alien and all of a sudden he's having dinner. He's fine. He's laughing. And all of a sudden it's bad. And then the last one is a movie called Audition. It's a Japanese film. And what's so shocking about it, it is so hardcore violent. But the first half of the movie plays out like a very sweet, silly, romantic comedy movie. And then all of a sudden, it switches gear into one of the grossest torture movies ever. Super violent. And it all happens when you see this guy or this girl with a trash bag in her apartment and it moves. And you're like, holy shit. And then you can Google, like, the hardcore scenes from this movie. And I guarantee you won't be able to, like, look at it. You'll be covering your eyes. But what's so great about it is that the half of the movie plays out like a sweet romantic comedy movie. And then all of a sudden, bam, without any warning, what happened?
You know, I got to mention this when we're talking about shocking gore moments in movies. The first time I saw Hostel 1, when that one came out, and where he's got the blowtorch to the girl's eye and the guy has to cut her eye off.
Yes.
And it just the pus oozes out. That was one of the most shocking things that I've ever seen. I was seriously grossed out by that.
Yeah, that was. I remember I saw both of those movies in the theater. So yeah, those are my most shocking moments.
I've actually got one more. Now that you guys talk about it, it makes me think. With the age that I was at, the first RoboCop movie, when Murphy basically gets blown away by all those dudes. that was pretty shocking to see as a kid with the age that I was at.
Me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Not only is it brutally violent, but that's the first time I can remember seeing brutal violence done to a character that's a police officer.
I totally agree.
And this was the moment that Jeremy and Brian went from being a child to being a man.
That's
every bit of innocence was sucked out of you in that moment.
It was. That scene is so hardcore because he is like, it's like his first day out as the cop. And he's like by the books, you know, and then, dude, they just like literally just don't shoot him. They torture him.
I thought it was his partner's first day out.
No, it's Peter Weller's the new guy, right? And the chick is the veteran, is what I remember.
I don't think you're correct.
I'm going to have to look that up, but I thought that was the case. But
for
I could
what
be
it's worth, I believe Jeremy.
Okay, there you go.
I don't remember at all.
All right, yeah, I'm trying to remember. You could be right, but that scene when his hand, they shoot his hand off, is crazy. And then they put so many it's crazy. I'm pretty sure it's Peter Weller's. It's RoboCop's first day before he dies, because I think that's what makes it his like first day out on the job.
What's the movie where it's like it's a comedy movie and a guy's getting his arms like chopped off and he's like, is it the Knight in the Holy Grail movie? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Oh, the Black Knight? Tis but a scratch.
Yeah, it's basically like a really dark version of that scene.
It's just a flesh wound.
It's just a really unhappy version of that.
we'll call it a draw. So good. Yeah, shocking. Those are some shocking moments and fantastic moments at that. But that is we had a long episode today of Mediocrity. On iTunes and Stitcher Radio, subscribe, please. We love you, Jeremy and John. Thank you as always, Jeremy. Where can they find you on them internets?
Jeremy Megert Art on the Instagram and the Twitter.
Very cool. And you can find Atterbury online in the Middle East under Emojin Poots.
.com.
.com. He loves it. All right. Thanks for listening. We love you, and we'll be back next week.